Okay.
I could not get the recording to cooperate for me last week. I don't know.
Oh.
Bear with me.
Did you have *9* and then it asks you for the code, the PIN?
Yeah,
code.
I did. I tried to do whatever it was you emailed me, but it didn't work.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll have to figure that out at some point. It's
yeah.
It's changed a little bit, so it might be that.
Ah.
Okay, so you have Scott, Louise, Don, and Doug.
Andy.
Who else is on? Andy?
What's on?
Oh. Okay, well, about half of us were at the review camp. I can give a little update of it. We reviewed about 360 resources. I know that on the order of 200 and some passed explicitly. 75 more were kicked to the editorial board, and I can tell you from my own team's experience that 75% of the ones we sent to the editorial board, we wanted to pass, but we needed some decision that it just couldn't be in the regular pool of passed. So they will pass, but so we have a very good number coming through, so we're pretty pleased. I don't know, Scott and Louise, you are also there. Anything you want to add?
No, I thought the process went really well, and you all had it planned extremely well, and so it was organized and an enjoyable process. So,
good.
Nice to hear the numbers. I was wondering how many did you say started out this year?
360 went into the review camp. That's not counting. There was a group that went through a review camp, a regional review camp in June. It was only 1.5 days, and it was only people that were immediately there in Boulder, so there was no travel costs associated with it. And I don't know how many they actually looked at, but 30 passed. And so we've not done anything with those since. We were waiting until after this one to start thinking about the cataloging and process. But so we have 30 from that. And we were hoping that we'd at least get 250 from this one, and I think we will. So I can go in and actually look and see what the numbers are at this point. Because, the other piece was those that are so things could pass, just so everybody else is aware of what things could pass. But then the other thing that the team was supposed to do was to complete the annotation. These are basically pulling together in a coherent way the comments from all the reviews and to provide that input that would appear on the Clean Pathway page. That was the other piece, that some things will pass and have the annotations complete, and some things will just have passed and the annotations still to be complete. All right, so here's the review camp outcome. Okay, so this actually includes, this is the review outcomes from all review camps altogether, which means the 92 resources that are already in the collection is in this number. So the ones that have passed with annotations complete is 295. Requires further review by the editorial team, 76. And past review, which means that the annotations still need to be complete, is 38. So the 295 plus the 38 is those for sure are in. We just, not all of them, well, obviously most of them haven't been cataloged yet. Only the first 92 are cataloged already. And then 76... went to the editorial board, and we can make a broad assumption that at least half of those will probably pass. That's just a big guesstimate. But anyway, so that gives us 330 that have passed, and then possibly another 35 to 40 that will come through the editorial board and pass. So 330 plus another 35, so 370, something on that order. Mm-hmm. So, not bad.
Well, and our goal, I think, is 500. At least that's what is in our
right
proposal. So, We're well.
All right. So I think we're going to make some decisions about looking for further resources. I think that we're going to be much more targeted in the last year as we identify those additional 130-some, at least 130-some. We do want to develop the review criteria for courses and curriculum, but we won't be reviewing a whole lot of those because of the amount of time it takes. But we do want to do enough to establish the criteria so that we can then work with different climate change education-funded projects that are developing curriculum in a peer review process where we iterate with them, and as they develop the materials, they are addressing the review criteria up front. So we want to do that, and then the other piece we'll do is we'll look for where there are holes in the collection and address those. And then the third area is a little bit more difficult to look at in that a lot of the resources, while they're tagged to a particular essential principle, to be accepted, they don't necessarily have to address the whole principle, and they most likely address one or two grade levels. So holes with respect to addressing the entire essential principle and with respect to grade level are other things we will probably consider as we move forward. So there's a lot of ways of looking at this, but I think we've now done our big plug for getting lots of resources. I think we're going to be much more strategic as we move into the third year for which resources we are actually going to be looking at. The other thing that we have to establish in this third year is taking a look at the existing collection and making sure or defining a process where if there is a better resource around on a particular topic, that we don't just accumulate lots of resources that address exactly the same thing. I mean, a lot of people at the review camp expressed concern that they were looking at a resource and they thought it was okay, and they didn't want to not pass it if we don't have anything in that area, but if we have a better resource in that area, they then didn't want to pass it. So that balance, what we told people at the review camp is we're not set up to really consider what's already in the collection. So just go ahead and review it. But then in this third year, we're going to have to think through that process of examining the existing collection and making some judgments, developing some criteria for deaccessioning resources, replacing resources. There's also the process of re-reviewing for the science for those that are identified as cutting-edge science. I mean, a number of resources didn't pass simply because the science was too dated. And some of them can easily be updated, and it could be that some of those were kicked up to the editorial board, because what we did in the editorial board last year is those that we thought we knew the creator and they could possibly fix, we kind of went to them with, can you address these things, and then we'll accept it. So there's a lot of things to consider, but we will have a much more targeted process next year.
Tamara, is 500 resources the limit, or is that the goal, minimum goal?
That was what we promised in the proposal. So, and we picked 500. The number is just a round number. We do want to address all the grade levels, and we do want to address all the essential principles. So if it goes over that, I mean, if it's fine if it goes over that. We did promise 500, and I don't know that any of us did an analysis of how many essential principles are multiplied by how many grade levels there are and how many resources. What we did want to make the point is less is more in terms of really identifying the best resources and not having a teacher go in and finding when they narrow it down enough that they end up choosing between four or five resources instead of 25 resources, because they just don't have time to look at 25 resources.
Right, but I think the point that was made at the review camp was a good one to keep in mind, and that is that, you know, you might have a carbon cycle activity, for example. One might be an active up, moving around activity. One might be a pencil and paper activity. One might be an animation. One might be a movie.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so we just want to keep it, and then one might be geared for one grade level and one might be for another. So that point I think we have to keep in mind all the time, that there's so many different possible ways to approach it.
Yes, no, I absolutely agree with you. Certainly the grade level part is already built in, but the type of resource and the kind of learner that it addresses is also a concern. So I hear you very loud and clear there. I think the concern was, it wasn't so much this year, but last year, I know at least my team had, we reviewed maybe about 5 carbon footprint calculators. And there's like just so many of those you need, you know. So we didn't discriminate them last year. But it could be that now once we have a significant body of the collection, we might identify those things that are a pit. I mean, it could be that the idea is if two resources address the same question in much the same way, but one's easier to use or one's a better resource or one's more up-to-date science. I mean, we're not going to just deaccession things when we think that there's too many, but we do still want to be cognizant of that balance between too many and not enough.
Right.
Okay, so that's the report from the Clean Review Camp. We will be cataloging these things. I mean, there's a number of other decisions. This year, we've developed the technology to do the strand maps, and what that means is that it's an online tool where the resource is tagged to a AAA's benchmark. And if you click on that, you go to the benchmarks, which show you the related benchmarks just below it, the supporting concepts, and those just above it, and identifying the resources within the clean collection that can help you teach those also. Up until this point, we've just tagged them to the benchmark, but we've not gone any further. And that technology will be integrated this fall. But unlike last year where we made the site live for the public on November 1st. This year, as each resource is cataloged, it will go live so that there won't be one day where all of a sudden it goes from 92 resources to 300 resources. It will just, they'll just go live as they're ready to be, as they're cataloged this time. So, and that'll be the job for the fall. The other thing that we will be doing is aligning with the NAAW guidelines for environmental education. We hadn't gotten to that piece yet, and we will be doing that this year also. And then there's the energy literacies to consider, and that we will have to redo the past resources because we developed a preliminary set of energy literacies just so that we could tag energy resources last year. But as soon as the new energy literacies come out, Ted Willard will be aligning those with the benchmarks, and so that will be available. So the resources will be tagged with that also.
Right.
And that's supposed to occur all through the fall.
We're not over.
Nope. Okay. Oh, and then I have some other news on a completely different note. Everybody might be aware that the AGU deadline has now passed. It was August 4th. We, through the Climate Literacy Network, we coordinated a set of 7 sessions at the AGU meeting, and I'm very happy to say that we had 96 abstracts submitted.
Great.
So they range from 3 of the sessions each have 19, a couple of sessions have 11 or 12, and then there's a couple of sessions that are in the 6 or 7 range, and those might be combined. There is one additional climate change education session that addressed research, and that might be combined with ours also.
Is that Elena Sparrow's?
What?
Is that Elena Sparrow's one?
I don't think so.
No?
No, I don't. I didn't see. I would remember if her name was on it. I don't remember her name being on it.
That's very.
So I don't know. Were there other questions or comments with respect to that?
Well, that's a tremendous amount of interest. That's
yes, the deadline was during the review camp. We were all checking online as to what the status of how many abstracts had been submitted. So that's really tremendous, which really showed the power of having multiple sessions, because I don't think if we hadn't discriminated the kind of topics we were after, we would never have gotten 96 abstracts. Last year, we had one climate change education session, which Susan Burr, Mark McCaffrey, and I think Steve Ackerman and I convened, and I think we only got on the order of 20 abstracts or so, something on that order of magnitude. So 96 is a huge leap.
Yes.
Yeah, that's great.
So, Tamara, what happens with those? Is it possible that some of them will be rejected, or is it just simply a matter of which ones are given live and which ones are posters?
Most, I rarely is one rejected, at least from my experience in being a convener. However, what we'll do is there is some chance that sessions will be combined. If there's a low number of abstracts, and there was another climate change session, actually it was yours, Louise, right, that was combined with the one Susan and I put together last year.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So then the conveners of the two sessions make decisions. And then, yes, the decision is poster or oral session, and the order that the speakers are the speakers or the posters are in. In addition, the other decision is the conveners of the oral and poster sessions. Mm-hmm. And so those are all decisions. And what I'll try to do is once we get the word that it's available for us to start talking about those orders, we'll probably have a telecon for all the conveners where there may be some chance where it might be, as you look through the abstracts for one session, there might be one that seems out of place that we should give to another session, and you can trade abstracts around like that. I don't anticipate there's going to be a lot of that, but it could be possible, so we'll see how that plays out. I think that it'll be more of a question of having the conversation if sessions are asked to combine. So, but I think that AGU first has to decide how many oral sessions each one of these sessions gets. And then once they make that decision, then they let the conveners distinguish which are going to be posters and which are going to be orals. Unless there's a poster, an abstract that's just way out of line for what AGU is all about, because usually I've had the situation where an abstract's out of line with a particular session, but they're also general education sessions or general sessions for every scientific discipline at AGU. So it's usually then, unless it's just an inappropriate abstract, it gets put into another session that's more appropriate.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll certainly be a presence at AGU then.
Yeah. Yes, and we're also going to be quite a presence at both GSA and NAAAE. We've been having the conversations, well, more or less, about the one-day workshop. And then I know that there's a lot of other sessions there, too, including a roundtable for the Climate Literacy Network. So anybody who's there should come and help out at that roundtable, because it's basically just talking to people as they come by.
You're talking about NAAAE for the roundtable, right?
Right. Yes.
Yeah, and I'll be at both, and I'm not sure if I got all my sessions into the Google Doc because that request came right as I got on the road, so I should check.
Okay. Yeah, I should ask people to update us so that we can actually put together a flyer. There's actually going to be a whole lot more sessions. I mean, our flyer is actually probably not as important this year as it was last year, because this year they have a climate thread.
Mm-hmm.
Last year they didn't have a climate thread, so our flyer was what got people to the climate sessions.
Yeah. Tamara, do you know what day the roundtable is?
Yes, I do. I have it on my calendar. I will look it up. It's October... Okay, it's October 14th. It's a Friday from 9:30 in the morning to 10:50. And the workshop is on Wednesday. It's
an
all-day workshop.
I'll be there for the workshop, but I won't be able to be there for the roundtable.
I think I'll be the other way around because I think I'll still be at GSA or traveling from GSA to.
Yeah, well, that's a problem for me too. I have Nick Haddad will do the presentation for Clean if I can't be there because I will be coming directly from GSA and I still don't know when my papers are yet.
Yeah, ditto that.
So there's a, for those of you who don't know, there's an overlap of one day. The GSA meeting ends on the 12th, and the NAAA meeting starts on the 12th. And one's in Raleigh, North Carolina, and one's in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So there's a little time for travel. So does anybody else have announcements of other things?
Tamara, this is Andy here. I'm not sure if you can hear me.
Andy, what's your last name?
Andy Geyer with NASA IGCCE.
Oh, okay.
How are you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Good. I just wanted to mention that at NAAA, we were going to have a meet and greet for anybody who's a PI of ours, and it would be on the evening of the 12th. It sounds like some of you won't be there, though.
Yeah. Certainly on the evening of the 12th, I will be on my way to Raleigh.
Okay.
Oh, wait, you're going to... Oh, no, the evening of the 12th, this is at NAAA?
Yeah, what we're doing is we have a bunch of new awards coming on, so we're going to have a new PI orientation meeting on the 12th for them, and they'll all be coming in. We were hoping that they can meet some of the already existing PIs at a meet and greet.
Well,
if that's maybe it's not the best date, and we should try to find out what might be a better date.
Okay, yeah, I know the 12th is going to be hard. I mean, if I'm already there, it's fine. And if I have to travel that day by the evening, I might be there. But if I have my talk at GSA on the 12th, I won't get there to Raleigh till very late.
Right. Okay.
So it might make sense to have it a different day, but a number of us. I know that Susan Burr also, who also has a NASA grant, has the same conflict.
Right.
So she also doesn't know whether she can be there on the 12th or not yet.
Right, okay.
So I don't know how many people that affects, but the number of us we're unsure. We're going to be at both. We just don't know exactly what day we're going to move.
Right, okay. Well, I'll just put that out there at the next meeting with the NASA folk and let them make the call on that, but maybe we can move
it.
Thank you.
All right, good. Let's see what else is going on. I can tell you about there was another NASA project that I'm involved with the University of Massachusetts Lowell. The program is a college course where the students then create videos for public engagement, but then students from the college course worked in a high school program this summer. It was a 5-week program that just ended last week in which the high school students spent a couple of weeks learning the science of climate change, but then the next 3 weeks putting together videos to engage the public. And they had their airing on August 4th, which unfortunately I was at the review camp and didn't see, but others here at Turk went to see their videos. And he said it was very powerful. The students were The videos themselves were rather short, and the content wasn't very deep. However, they were more intended as public engagement kinds of messages. And the processes that the students went through in terms of creating these had them studying and understanding the issues around climate change much more deeply. What Nick said that the most powerful part was at the end of each video, the students who created it were up at the front of the room answering questions and talking, and then their messages were very, very powerful for the entire audience. So that was a really interesting thing that went on. I visited the workshop a couple times during the course of the summer to watch the process. I kind of saw their videos about a week before they aired them. So they weren't complete, but they were quite interesting. So that's another thing that we've had.
Did that involve Randy Olson? Don't be such a scientist.
Randy Olson ran the workshop on creating the videos in the college course. And I actually was there visiting, observing part of that. He was not part of the high school program. Mm-hmm. The teacher at the high school is basically her job is teaching media. And so she has a basically an amazing, for a high school, they have an entire video production building. And so they have all of the editing software, all of the cameras, all of the, they have a studio where they can record, record events, and it's quite impressive. Some people that have come to view this, even some professional studios don't have all the equipment that this particular one does. So she's trained in all of that, so that she was the one that ran that one. But Randy Olson was involved in the college one.
Tamara, is there a place where we can see some of the videos? Have they put them online or anything?
I can send you the, well, Juliet might have sent it already, but I can send you the URL for their, I think they're on YouTube, and they actually might be on the UMass Lowell site. So I can send that link. I don't know about the high school ones, but I do know that the college ones, and the college ones were restricted. They were intended to be public service announcements, and they were restricted to 60 seconds. Okay. So I can send the link to that.
Great. Yes, do that. Tamara, this is Caroline Lewis, and this is exactly the type of engagement I love to read about. It's feeding the deficit. It's feeding the need for more content. So I love it. And we're doing that here, too. I also think that more and more high schools and college campuses have that video editing and video making and PSA editing thing. And I was wondering if Lowell, Massachusetts was sharing or replicating or...
Okay, so the plan for this grant is actually that they're... So now that they've done the college program and the high school program, they'll run that again next year. But we're going to take what they've learned from the high school program and put together a toolkit for educators on how to go about having their students do these videos. And then that is something that'll get shared, well, if officially as part of the grant, it's going to get shared with all of the NASA-funded projects. But we will put it out to the Climate Literacy Network, and since this is the New England region, we actually did eventually build a website for Clean New England. It'll be shared in that context, specifically to the New England audiences, but as a toolkit is generic, it doesn't depend on region. It'll be available to anybody who wants to use it. But it's intended to be, we'll be helping them run a professional development program basically to develop this toolkit so that it's available for educators to use.
I think the idea that I'm after, so many of us are already doing a lot of this PSA and encouraging the 60-second. It's nice to have templates to follow. But
right.
I'm much more interested in feeding the concept of having these college courses that are teaching climate science to these kids have that engagement and for them to raise the message. So I'm very interested in encouraging the use of that pedagogy at the culmination or transition towards the end of that course. And I will definitely, you know, I'm working in the Miami area colleges in that area, but I do think that it's a pedagogical tool that is so effective for the professors, the college students, the high school students, and then the audiences they're addressing. So I don't know how to spread that up in your region, but I think it's just concept that should be mimicked. And encouraged.
Yeah, absolutely. So, are there any other things that people have been involved in that they'd like to inform everybody about?
Well, I was wondering about that National Academy Climate Change Communication coming up at the end of the month. Is that still on?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm actually on the steering committee for that. It is on August 31st and September 1st. It's National Research Council's Climate Change Education Roundtable. The workshop, it's going to be a workshop, and it's focusing on K through 14 climate change education in formal contexts. And so there are sessions, that I don't think that they've officially shared the agenda yet, but they will soon. And I've been told, I've asked, that there will be ways for people to participate remotely. People can also register and actually come physically if they're in the area.
Do you have a link to that yet?
No. I'll share it when I do know, but I don't think that they've shared the agenda yet. But I will as soon as it is available. Don, do you know anything more? Let's see, the frameworks have been out, right? The science frameworks have come out, and I guess now the next step is that Achieve is going to create the standards that go along with that. I guess Don is gone.
Tamara, this is Carol Landis. I have an announcement, I guess, of sorts. The Spanish version of the DVD that I sent out earlier is actually available for free download now for reviewers. We'd like to have anyone who's either native Spanish speaker or someone who could, look at a particular chapter, perhaps. And I can send out the information about the download. The file is not absolutely perfect because, for some reason, the quizzes aren't keeping score. But that's such a minor detail, I decided to put it out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I get some feedback, we will also post the final version along with the supplemental files.
Okay, why don't you send that out to the Climate Literacy Network at large and ask and request. Put the caveat that you know that some things aren't working well, but what we really need is science review, the Spanish translation review.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
So, Carol, how did you translate literacy? This is an issue that's been going on in a couple of circles. It's what's the best word in Spanish for literacy?
I don't speak Spanish. I relied on my translators. I wonder if there's a way to search the document. I don't know.
Well, that will be something I'll look for because it's been an issue that's come up certainly in the climate literacy community, but also in the ocean literacy community. It's that Spanish does not have words that work in quite the same way as literacy does in English. So it's been an interesting challenge. Some people have actually just dropped the word of literacy because it doesn't work in Spanish and have just focused on, principles like climate principles as opposed to climate literacy principles. So it'll be interesting. I'll be very curious what you've done there.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
This is Don. I was there, but my mute wouldn't turn off.
Oh, I see. So did you have anything to add about the frameworks, or is that just something that's ongoing now with Achieve?
Yeah, it's ongoing with Achieve. I'm peripherally, very, very peripherally involved, depending on what happens with New York State's involvement as a they're going to identify 6 to 8 states that will serve as sort of title like that. And if New York, I am part of the proposed team for New York State, if New York State gets accepted to that. So mm-hmm. maybe I'll be continually involved. There were a lot of changes in the earth science part that we on the earth science design team had nothing to do with. Which is kind of interesting. They went from 4 core ideas in the earth sciences to 3 and folded things together in ways that I wouldn't have chosen to do, and I think made it in certain ways more factoidal than it was before, which is too bad. But I still think it's a big step forward, and I'm hopeful that it will actually filter down to classrooms in a meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about what I know.
All right. Well, if New York gets selected and you're part of the conversation, you can let us know.
I will.
Okay, is there anything else people would like to share? Well, okay then. I guess we are done for today, and we will have a call again next week.
Thank you so much for everything. It's great having all
Thank
these wonderful
you.
Reviewed resources.
Yes, thanks.
Yes.
There's definitely some great stuff out there. Good.
Okay, well, thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Tim.
All right.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.